Hello, Internet. Welcome to episode 60 of the Assorted Calibers podcast, the Second Amendment podcast that has a little bit for everyone. I'm Weirdbeard, and with me, as always, is my wonderful hostess, Aaron Paulette. How you doing, Aaron?
I'm not going to air dirty laundry, but for those of you who follow the Pink Pistols page, today has been a day of glorious schadenfreude. So I'm just going to leave it nice and vague. But, you know, it's Mama warned him. If I wake up unhappy, ain't nobody gonna be happy. I was unhappy.
So Aaron's had a day, and, well, we are recording this the Monday after Independence Day. So it is the Monday after a long weekend. And let me tell you, those always suck.
Yeah, and that might have something to do with it. There are just a lot of people who just seem to be itching for a fight, and... let's get off this topic before I air dirty laundry that I shouldn't. So it has been a very busy day for me. I can't really talk about a whole lot, you know what, I saw Spider-Man Far From Home, and it was friggin' awesome. I that's a great movie. And I know that you were completely behind on your Marvel movies, but it was really good. And so I got out and I got to see a movie, and that really helped my state of mind.
Cool, cool. Who's the villain in that one?
Okay, so mild spoilers for people who don't follow comics. It's Mysterio.
Okay, I actually don't know Mysterio all that well.
Illusion guy with fishbowl head.
Yes, yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
The dude with the space helmet.
Yeah, and there's like frequently green mist around him, and mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it's
good. And I have to say that it's a spoiler because he's billed as a hero at first. And I'm just scratching my head going, what are they doing? Are they pulling something? Oh, he's claiming to be from an alternate dimension? Okay, well, that's possible. Oh, okay, there's the reveal. Cool.
Was it not obvious that he's Mysterio at first?
Well, I mean, it was obvious that he was Mysterio. Yeah. I mean, he looks like him, and then they give him that name pretty quickly, but it's like he's acting like a hero, and it's like, so is this the same Mysterio I know from the comics, or what are they doing?
I gotta say, that is super soft spoiler, because if you've got 55 years of comic canon behind it, suddenly when Mysterio shows up, nah, I think he's gonna be bad guy.
Yeah, I mean, he's probably going to be the villain, but I just, you know, there are some people who don't want to hear anything, and so when I mention, well, he acts like the hero at first, people go, don't tell me. So,
though, you know what? Speaking of interesting canon, I had not picked it up because I was actually, I'm a Fairweather comic book fan, my daughter is into superheroes, and one afternoon we decided to watch the first Tim Burton Batman, the one with Michael Keaton and Jack Nicholson as the Joker.
Right, the one good Batman movie from the 80s.
Yes, actually, that I think it was 91, but no, it might have been 89.
It was 89.
Okay, yeah, but yeah, it was...
I suppose you could argue that all the others are from the 90s, but whatever.
Yeah, but those aren't good.
No, they aren't. Yeah,
no, it isn't until Christopher Nolan comes in that you start getting good Batmans again.
Mm-hmm.
Was watching that, and I had never picked it up I'd heard the character and followed the movie. I was a huge fan of it in the early 80s, in the 80s and 90s. That movie came out. It was a big deal for me. And I did not realize that Billy Dee Williams is Harvey Dent. And they had Harvey Dent, and under no circumstances he become Two-Face. So it was just one of those. That is like the one instance where it is one of those, like, all right, mentioning, all right, this character's Harvey Dent. All right, get ready for him to screw over Batman. But it doesn't happen until Christopher Nolan.
Yeah, I know, that was so weird.
All right, let's get on to some even happier news, Aaron. Cheer us up.
Okay, so who dropped out of the election running this time?
Oh, God. Like it's one of those, like, who do you want to pick? Who do you want to pick? And I got to tell you, on the top of my list, Eric Swalwell, the I am going to nuke the gun owners candidate, has dropped out of the race. And I point this out again. The Assorted Calibers podcast is a nonpartisan podcast. You know what? If you vote Democrat and you're planning on voting against Trump and all that, guess what? God bless you. Listen to this podcast. This is a safe space for you. We are here for supporting the Second Amendment. But I will say, pretty sure, I don't think, I mean, there's a few characters that, I mean, the Democrat stage is so huge right now. There's a few characters that I don't know very well. Like, don't even like, who the hell is that guy? Like, I'm watching debate coverage and I'm like, who is that? And, but of all the ones that are major polling, they are super duper anti-gun. And so I don't know what to tell you. I am nonpartisan, but let me tell you to be fair, we could argue that Trump is super duper anti-gun as well. So either way, there's going to be an anti-gun. There's going to be at least one anti-gun candidate on the ticket come November. As far as that field goes, Eric Swalwell, he was hands down the number one anti-gun guy. As a matter of fact, I've got a link in the show notes with them talking about some of the stuff he's going through. And he talks a whole lot about his gun control policies and ideas. And so he was definitely the entrenched anti-gun candidate and couldn't raise any money and couldn't get any popularity. So I'm going to say, I mean, you can't necessarily read into it, but you know what? For the sake of my own mental health, I'm reading into it. That also might be why I would say next on the list would be, I mean, Kamala Harris has been pretty vocal on that, but I think Cory Booker is the next up as far as the I'm going to be super duper crazy flag waving anti-gun. And so that was kind of the reason why I decided to air that Cory Booker one a little bit early, just in case.
Yeah. So I think to summarize your position, you don't really much care if our listeners vote Democrat. You just care if they vote anti-gun.
That is correct.
Yeah.
Or okay. You know what? I'm not even going to care if somebody voted for an anti-gun Democrat. If they said, yes, but they're good on this, 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 and this. And honestly speaking, I see those as more important, or I think the Supreme Court will shoot down their big pie in the sky dreams or all of that. I am not a one issue voter myself. I do hold the Second Amendment vote very, very high only because I see it as kind of a linchpin issue. I personally see a lot of the people that are stridently anti-gun, especially the people that are fully aware of the numbers and have people that do numbers. And so when they talk about how this is going to cause huge amounts of safety and we need to do this and it'll lower our murder rate and it'll make kittens and ponies and baby ducks and everything, they know that they're lying. They're straight up lying and they know better. I personally see that as they want to take away my guns because they want to do things that an armed populace would not be friendly to. And so I do get a little linchpinny on that issue. So I do hold it much higher than some of the other issues. But at the same time, there's going to be times where, yeah, you're going to have a choice. Like, I voted for the Democrat for governor because we had a super anti-gun governor and he betrayed the gun owners. And so I wanted him gone. So I voted for the anti-gun Democrat because, yep, that was how I gamed that out. So again, totally nonpartisan, but for us to keep on super duper good terms, yeah, show your work on the Second Amendment when justifying a vote.
All right, so it's good that we have that settled. Have we talked this down, or do we need to dwell a little bit more on Eric Nukumal Swalwell?
I don't think we do.
Okay.
Why talk about them? The Democrats aren't even talking about him.
Okay.
Your home party doesn't even like you. Go home, Eric. To the crying pillow, Eric.
So, you know, another group that historically doesn't like guns and gun ownership are doctors.
Mm-hmm.
But I understand, Weird, that you spoke to someone who is not only a doctor and pro-gun, but works for a group that represents pro-gun doctors. Tell us more.
Yeah, I mean, I was at this fashion show at the NRA annual meeting, and I was talking to this male model. And it turns out that besides being alarmingly good-looking, he is also an orthopedic surgeon and the membership director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. I'm, of course, talking about Dr. John Adine, if you haven't heard of him. And we sat down to discuss his organization. So as Aaron and I were talking about the Concealed Carry Fashion Show at the NRA annual meeting, one of the very lovely male models on that scene was a friend of mine, Dr. John Adine. And interesting enough, we were talking about two of my great passions, which is surgery and firearms. And I never even thought while we were talking to say, you know what, Dr. Adine, you've never been on my show. We should set something up. So I contacted him the other day, and here is Dr. John Adine. How you doing, doctor?
I'm doing great, Weird. How you doing, man?
Doing very, very good. So the big thing we want to talk about is, what is this organization that you are a part of that is doing such wonderful things for the Second Amendment?
All right. Well, I'm the membership director for Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership. It's a Second Amendment Foundation organization. We come under that umbrella, although it was started initially under the Claremont Institute back in the 90s by Dr. Timothy Wheeler. Basically, what it is an advocacy and watchdog group confronting the anti-gun bias in medicine. We have a group of people who review, analyze, and critique anti-gun publications, and we're mostly an educational group. You know, we really want to not only educate health professionals, but the general populace as well, as far as but using it using a scientific basis. In other words, we look at papers that are put out by established medicine, and we tear them apart. And expose the biases and basically the lies that are put out. And Tim Wheeler started DRGO because in California he noticed that there was a significant, you know, anti-Second Amendment bias in the medical community there. And then, you know, the like the CDC and a lot of other, you know, government establishment groups and organizations were publishing all this biased research, basically it's anti-gun propaganda, and they had selection bias and they had all kinds of other biases. And so Dr. Wheeler organized a bunch of his friends into Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, and they actually testified in front of the congressional committee to get that type of research defunded from the CDC's budget. And notice I didn't say all gun violence research was defunded, but it was the biased advocacy research that they were doing, basically gun control, quote-unquote, research. Because this really wasn't research. It was, let's start off with this conclusion, and let's craft the data to back up our conclusion. And so this is the kind of stuff that happened. So we ended up with the Dickey Amendment, and that's still – is actually in force now. And, you know, and so the left will talk about, you know, how there's no funding for, you know, gun violence research. And that's just a bunch of hooey, basically. It's a bunch of BS, because there's plenty of money out there. In fact, the state of California funded $5 million to Dr. Garen Wintemute at UC Davis in Sacramento to set up his, violence research center. And then the state of New Jersey just spent $2 million to do it for Rutgers University. And then, of course, we have the poor man, Michael Bloomberg, who has the Bloomberg School of Public Health at Johns Hopkins.
If you weren't going to mention that one, I was going to bring that one up.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, so you have government money because, oh, my goodness, you know, research could never get done without government money. But then you have Bloomberg's billions of dollars that he throws at the Bloomberg School of Public Health. And so I like to call us the anti-Bloomberg School of Public Health, because that's kind of what we do. When we get this kind of research that comes out with, you know, from the AMA or from, you know, Bloomberg School of Public Health or any number of things, we'll have, you know, a couple of our writers analyze it and cut it up. And plus we get a lot of good opinion pieces as well from a lot of our writers, you know, just on general topics that interest them. Our blog comes out on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and it can be found at drgo.us. And that's our main website. There's also a lot of really good data there. For instance, we have a white paper that explains the scientific basis why suppressors are the best choice for hearing protection. And it's done by four ear, nose, and throat surgeons, one of which, of course, was Dr. Wheeler, who was an ear, nose, and throat surgeon. And they had two neuro-otologists who deal with sensory neural hearing loss. And that's the major one that you get from unprotected firearms use, from noise, from basically noise. And it's that 140 decibel threshold that gives you immediate permanent hearing loss. So if you exposed to, you know, sound louder than that, you basically kill off the hair cells that sense that, or that move in the fluid that's in the cochlea, and that's what actually is the sensory organ that senses sound, and that's how you get hearing loss. We also have another one that we talk about. What do you do when your doctor asks you if you own a gun? And there's a lot of things there's kind of a list of things that you can do.
Could you actually give us just a couple of them off that?
I'll
have that article linked in our show notes, so
okay.
People listening can go check out the whole thing. But I mean, that's something that I get asked every time I go and see a doctor, and it's I always wonder what the best way to handle it is.
Right. Well, I mean, there's certainly a lot of things you can do. First thing you could do is just lie and tell them you don't have any guns. You know, as far as I'm concerned, and you know, Tom Gresham says this as well. Says, you know, it's not a sin to lie to somebody that doesn't have any business knowing the truth. You know, and so you can tell them I don't have guns. If they press you, and you can say, look, we're here for, you know, my knee injury. What does this have to do with this? And there's something called an ethical boundary violation, and what that is it's using the position of a physician. Using the physician-patient relationship to push a political agenda. And so we see that, you know, amongst the anti-Second Amendment physicians, and some of them are they're very zealous, you know, when it comes to doing this. And you can actually report them to the state medical board as a boundary violation. And that's a serious thing. They got to answer that. And a lot of times there's an investigation, and they can get sanctioned, they can get fined, they can get suspended. Also, you can go to your insurance company and say, hey, this guy is doing this, this, and this. And, you know, and sometimes they can lose their insurance contracts. David Kodria, who lives in Ohio, he was a writer. And he and a friend of his who was now since deceased was a sheriff in Los Angeles County, had this questionnaire that said, I am fully aware of all the risks and benefits and storage of firearms use. Or I have absolutely no idea what I'm talking about, but I'm still going to give you advice anyway. And, you know, does your insurance company know that you're practicing outside of your scope of practice and out of your education? You know, and you ask them, you know, so if you do this, are you going to, you know, if I follow your advice and I'm harmed and I sue you, is your insurance company going to cover your malpractice? Because this is, you know, you're practicing outside of your scope of medicine. You don't have any education. You know, what's your education? What's your certification? And a lot of these people don't even know what they're talking about. You know that, and I know that.
Well,
and,
actually,
and your listeners do.
That's actually been mine every time I get asked about it. I don't lie. I am subtle in Massachusetts because very bad things can happen to you as a gun owner here. As a general rule, when directly asked, I don't lie because I don't think that does the Second Amendment any good for me to be invisible. And so far, it hasn't caused any major problems for me. But yeah, the doctor will ask me, are there any firearms at home? Yes, there are. Are they all locked up? Of which kind I look right at them and I go, it would be a felony in the state of Massachusetts for me not to have them locked up. And something just as simple as that. And they just always kind of look at me and they're like, they have no idea what I'm talking about. And I'm like, well, then what are you talking to me about guns for?
Yeah, you know nothing about them.
And they just instinctively go, oh, geez, I'm way over my head immediately on question two. And that's the end of it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the problem is this, you know, in the age of electronic medical records, all that stuff gets noted in your record, mm-hmm. and the government, it's searchable by the government. So that's essentially a backdoor gun registry, isn't it?
It can be.
You living in Massachusetts, you're pretty much restricted, and I'm sure they, you know, they already have a de facto gun registry.
I mean, I need to be licensed and registered, and all my firearms are on the registry for all the crimes that's going to solve.
Right, but in other states, you know, there's like I live in Texas, and there's no gun. I don't need a piece of paper from the government that says I can own a gun. I can walk into a store, pull out my concealed license, and walk out with a gun the same day. I don't even have to go through a background check. Mm-hmm. I've already had the ultimate background check. Now, some people will say, "Well, yeah, your concealed license, that's a kind of a registry too," and it may be. You're right. And, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that's none of that stuff is actually, you know, constitutional. But, you know, it's in the world we live in and we have to do what we have to do. Mm-hmm. And but, yeah, no, I think that that's you know, quite an appropriate thing to do. But the bottom line is if they're pushing a political agenda, you can put the stop to it. And say, look, this is a boundary violation. And if you continue with this. And the other thing is you can say, look, you know, we're done. Goodbye. I'm leaving and get another doctor. Now, not everybody can get away with that. Some people are on, you know, limited plans and this is the one specialist that you have access to. And, you know, so it puts people in a position that they really don't need to be put in. It can be difficult. Definitely can be difficult. So the other thing that DRGO has is something called 2adoc.com. So if you're tired of your doctors asking you these stupid questions, we have a registry. Oh, it's kind of more of a matching service, I guess, for lack of a better term, where we have 2A friendly physicians and we match them up with patients who want their rights respected. And the nice thing about it is it's not a searchable database. Basically, when you submit what you're looking for, the type of doctor and what type of area, we consult our list of doctors who have joined. Our you know, thing, and then we match you up, and we'll send you email of this doctor, this doctor, this doctor, if we have somebody in your area in that specialty area. Mm-hmm. Now, the problem with it is that we actually need more doctors to sign up for this. There's plenty of demand for it. I don't go a day without two or three people applying, you know, looking for somebody, but we see very few doctors. And the specialty areas that we really need are primary care doctors like family practice and internal medicine, pediatricians, and then also ophthalmologists, optometrists. What a surprise that shooters want to have a good doctor that can actually help them with their vision, right? Mm-hmm. And then the other thing is psychiatry, because you know a lot of people are dealing with the legal system, and they're being put through the ringers with, you know, the saying that, oh, you're crazy or, oh, you know what I'm talking about. Yeah. You know, I mean, they try to, what they've done is actually make mental illness a disqualifier for firearms ownership, which is not necessarily the case. Most people who are, you know, have mental illness, say they're depressed or whatever, they're not a risk to you and I, for the most part, they're at risk of themselves to some degree, and suicide is certainly an issue. Mm-hmm. And that's an appropriate thing to ask about guns about. But, you know, people who are, you know, say schizophrenic or whatever, those people are more likely to be victimized than they are to be a violent murderer or killer. But, you know, I mean, and those people can be treated with medication and stuff like that. But, you know, the bottom line is, you know, people are looking for doctors that will respect their privacy and their rights, and they don't want to have to go through this, the uncomfortable questions about your guns. You know, the kind of, you know, questions that I prefer are like, so what are you carrying today?
Yeah.
That's my favorite. That's my favorite question about guns is not do you own a gun and, you know, blah, 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 blah. And that website is 2adoc.com. It's the number 2adoc.com.
And so do you have, I know you said you need more doctors, so that's, but is your coverage pretty good across the state? So say someone like me in Massachusetts or someone in Illinois or somebody in New York, would there be chances for you to get physicians there?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you live in rural upstate New York, you're looking for a psychiatrist, you're probably going to have a hard time finding
probably only one or two of them in your area.
Right.
Anyway.
Right. Exactly. But of course, you know, in Rochester is Dr. Robert Young, who is our editor and the guy that does our website and edits all of our work. And he's a psychiatrist. He's been doing psychiatry for 30 years. So, you know, they're there. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, pediatricians who are members. Now, you know, there's a pretty significant bias in the pediatric community. I'm a pediatric subspecialist in orthopedic surgery, so I deal with pediatricians. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and fortunately in Texas, it's probably not as rampant as it is in, say, I don't know, Massachusetts.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's where you're going to find that the vehemently anti-gun, you know, pediatricians and primary care doctors and whatever. So I think some of it's regional. In some of the bigger cities, you're probably going to have more of that than if you're out in the suburbs or in the rural areas. And again, you know, if you're in the South, it's probably less likely than if you are in the North. If you're along the coast, it's probably going to be, you know, bad. But if you're in Idaho or, you know, up in the mountain states or whatever, it's probably not going to be as big of a deal. So it can be pretty regional.
Well, awesome. I'll also put a link to that in the show notes. Dr. Adin, it's been great having you on. And that's just a great resources for gun owners.
Yeah. Well, you know, we're happy to do whatever we can do to help folks out. With both education and now with this matching service, it's still in the beginnings. We're probably been in with it for about the last year, year and a half. So it's still kind of in its infancy. So as things go along, I think we'll have more and more doctors. And oh, the other thing, it's absolutely free. There's no charge on either end. So either for the doctors or for the patients, that's free. It's a labor of love.
Oh, that's awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us on the show.
Oh, my pleasure again, and say hi to Aaron for me.
Hi, Dr. John. So speaking of psychiatry and 2adoc.com, that has been very useful to me personally, not for my own personal use, but because, well, my work for Second Amendment advocacy is getting to be rather well known, and a friend of mine messaged me on Facebook saying, hey, I live in New York and I have this diagnosis back from when I was a teenager. And, you know, I want to get a gun. And is there anything I can do to, you know, get this worked out somewhere? Essentially what happened was he wanted to get his concealed carry permit, but he also had a diagnosis back from when he was a kid, and he needed to see a psychiatrist about it, but didn't want to go to a psychiatrist in New York State and say, it's because I want a gun, and he didn't really know what to do. So first of all, I called in David because he lived in New York, and he knew how to navigate that, and he helped this person quite a bit, and then we got to the point of the psychiatric thing. And so it's like, you know, I'm going to talk to my friend, Dr. John, and maybe he can point me in the right direction because he's a doctor and he knows doctors. And he pointed me straight to 2adoc.com. And so I was able to give that information, to my friend. I haven't heard anything about it. I need to check on that, actually. It may just be that my friend is really busy and hasn't had a chance to update me. It may be that he is waiting to hear back. I don't know, because like Dr. John said, there's not a lot of doctors who do the psychiatry in New York, but maybe something good has come from that. So regardless, thank you, Doctors for Responsible Gun Ownership, for giving us this fantastic resource.
And by the way, I get it. It's a podcast. You don't want to go in the show notes, but definitely go in the show notes and check out all the links for that, because there's some really good resources and some really good articles and all that. Like, definitely check out their website. Like, it is really good, especially if you're like a science geek like me, where it's one of those like, oh, cool, they're going to be talking about stuff and they have footnotes. Like, no, I mean it. I am making this claim because there is scientific evidence that says this is true. Love it.
I had no idea you loved footnotes so much.
Have you not seen the show notes for my Fisks?
Now's probably a bad time to mention that when I tried my hand at writing erotica, I actually did have footnotes. I had at least three of them.
Is it wrong for me to say that's so hot?
No, that's good. That was, I like that you said that. No, you're not going to get to see it, but.
Oh my God, she's citing references.
Well, it was less citing references and more, I felt the need for whatever weird reason to justify how this was working out, but it didn't fit the narrative flow of the story. So it's like, it's almost like, again, when you're reading comic books and they have that little box at the bottom, you know, that explains, J. Jonah Jameson doesn't realize that his cameraman, Peter Parker, is also the Amazing Spider-Man, dun dun dun, you know, and it was just that kind of thing, only more in depth.
Now that we're in a hole, shall we stop digging?
Yes, please. So, as I just mentioned, David is a New Yorker, and he has been transplanted to Tennessee, and in general, he loves the freedom of his new home. But not all is great in the Volunteer State, specifically in regards to new laws regarding concealed carry.
Hi, and welcome to Gun Lovers and Other Strangers. Unfortunately, this segment will not be about ponies or fluffy bunnies. Sorry, Aaron. To clarify something from my previous segment, I did not claim that the AR was originally a Dutch invention. I said there was a Dutch connection. Prior to the AR-15, Armalite was marketing the 30 caliber AR-10 around the world. One of the countries that showed some interest was the Netherlands. In 1957, Armalite brokered a deal for a 5-year manufacturing license to Artillery Inrichting, a Dutch arms manufacturer. AI went on to make several variants of the AR-10 for foreign sale. That was the Dutch connection to the AR-15. Now, on to our regularly scheduled segment. Moving from New York to Tennessee has certainly revealed some cultural differences, one of which is in regards to the Second Amendment. When I lived in New York, there was constant pressure from a large majority to restrict our rights even further, and on the other side, a determined minority fighting valiantly to minimize that threat as much as possible. In Tennessee, the dynamic is somewhat reversed, sort of. There's constant pressure on the legislature to expand observance of the Second Amendment, and a small but vocal minority pushing to restrict those rights further. Unfortunately, this combined with a somewhat lackluster response from the supposedly pro-gun majority in the state legislature stymies our attempts to expand individual rights. In New York State, the SAFE Act was forced through the state legislature back in 2013. Part of this law further inconveniences citizens who went through the expensive and time-consuming process of getting a pistol license. It also further limited the types of firearms and accessories that can legally be owned. In Tennessee, we've been pushing for constitutional carry for a number of years. Many of the states surrounding ours have already passed laws of this type. The previous governor of Tennessee promised that if a constitutional carry bill was sent to his desk, he would sign it into law. It later came to light that he worked behind the scenes to make sure that such a bill never, in fact, made it to his desk. I've also noticed a difference in the attitude of some, and I emphasize here only some, gun owners and self-professed Second Amendment defenders here. I've noticed this attitude from a broad spectrum of people, including students in my classes, as well as customers and employees of local gun shops, including the one where I work. I find this very disheartening. In discussion with them, I've found that not only don't some of them support constitutional carry, they believe that the current permit class isn't thorough enough. This is a class made up of 6 hours of death by PowerPoint, a 50-question written test, and a 50-round shooting qualification, both of which require a 70% to pass. Of course, any additional restrictions wouldn't apply to them or their guns. So, what did the Tennessee State Legislature do this year instead of passing constitutional carry? They introduced a bill that would authorize a free concealed carry-only license as a step towards that goal. Sounds good, right? Except it was then amended several times during passage until what we finally wound up with was something significantly different. The current carry license would remain as an enhanced license, still costing $100 for 8 years. No other changes were made to that license except the name. The new free concealed carry-only license will now cost $65 for 8 years. The simple application process for this new concealed carry-only license will now require a photograph, 2 sets of fingerprints, and passing an online class. A class that doesn't exist yet. Finally, it added additional restrictions on where someone with this new license can actually carry their firearm. The only silver lining here is that this new law doesn't go into effect until January of 2020, so we may be able to adjust it next legislative session. I'm not holding my breath. This is very much not what we were asking for. The fact that this bill was supported by a state legislator who had worked against constitutional carry in previous sessions should have been a big red flag. Speaking of which, we narrowly avoided a red flag law this legislative session as well. On the plus side, several actually beneficial laws were passed. Amongst them was a prohibition on local governments from imposing regulations or restrictions on privately owned gun ranges that would be greater than the restrictions imposed on ranges that are owned or operated by the government. The 10-cent per box special tax on ammunition was repealed. The state law definition of firearm now includes a definition of antique firearms nearly identical to the federal definition of the same. Which means any firearm manufactured in or before 1898 is now considered an antique and is not regulated as a firearm. While I'm not satisfied with the gains this legislative session, they're a far cry from the constant losses in any given session of the New York State Legislature on this topic. In a future segment, I'll go over the additional abuse inflicted upon law-abiding New York State gun owners by their state legislature this year, and the valiant efforts of the defenders of the Second Amendment in New York. In the words of John Philpott Curran, the condition upon which God hath given liberty to man is eternal vigilance. Or to rephrase the IRA's statement after the Brighton hotel bombing, they only have to be lucky once. We have to be lucky always. I've asked our host to put links to some of the appropriate legislation in the show notes. That about wraps up this segment. If you have any questions for me or suggestions for future segments or a comment on a past segment, please post them on the Assorted Calibers podcast Facebook page and Aaron or Weird will make sure I get them. That's all for now. Thanks for listening. I'm David and this is Gun Lovers and Other Strangers.
You know, this was one of the things that I was terrified about when Michael Bloomberg attacked Maine through their referendum system, and he put a universal background check bill on the referendum and then dumped a whole bunch of money to buy out like all of the like radio and television ad space to talk about how good his universal background check law is going to be. And for those that have followed me enough, is one of the things I like to point out is that Northern New England is some of the most gun friendly places in the whole world. Maine has pretty much always, or at least open carry's always been legal in Maine. It's always been permitless in Maine. Concealed carry, I don't know when it started, but it's like maybe the 50s or all that was when they suddenly started requiring a permit for it. I've never actually looked back into it, but it's was a long, long time ago when the permit system came around, and it's always been shall issue. And it's just overall been a very, very gun friendly state, and just people just have guns and it's not a big deal. There's lots of hunting. There's lots of shooting. There's just lots of gun ownership. And I was so terrified that suddenly Michael Bloomberg moves into this fairly rural state that has not really had, doesn't even have like a hardcore anti-gun group that goes for it. And yeah, and just suddenly they would get this, would the Second Amendment supporters in Maine know how to fight. And thankfully I was wrong. They absolutely fought and fought hard, and Bloomberg has been driven away from Maine. And there was recently some new anti-gun laws came up, and there's a new, I believe she's anti-gun, but she is a pretty far to the left liberal governor. And even she just, yeah, let it go that these anti-gun laws, nope, we're not going to bother with them. They never made it to her desk. So sometimes it works out very, very well. And then other times you've got the shenanigans that David talked about. But yeah, you gotta fight. Even if you are in a quote unquote gun friendly state, that does not mean rest on your laurels, because they're coming for you. So now, returning in his quest for ultimate nerd status, Egghead is going to tell us the next step for the Theremin build. This stage, he's working on oscillators.
Ultimate nerd status? That's a bold claim considering this crew.
That's true.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the General Purpose Egghead. This is week two, talking about theremins. And today I will update you on the build progress of Sir Weirdington McBeard's mysterious theremin. The plan this week was to build the three oscillators required for a theremin. But I couldn't just make this simple and tell you how that went. I need to make you work for it a little bit. So what is an oscillator, and why does the theremin need three of them? So an oscillator is basically just a circuit that causes a voltage to vary back and forth, or oscillate, at a particular frequency. They are used very commonly in radio transmitters and receivers, as well as power supplies and anything using alternating current, because alternating current requires an oscillator to get the current to alternate or switch back and forth. You can think of an oscillator as an electrical circuit that vibrates at a certain frequency when you give it power. And a theremin requires three of these oscillators. One is a fixed reference oscillator for the pitch, and then two variable oscillators, one for the pitch and one for the volume. These oscillators vary in frequency as you move your hand closer or further from their respective antennas. Now, the simplest way to build an oscillator is to use an inductor and a capacitor and put them side by side in parallel. This is called an LC circuit, or sometimes called a tank circuit. And the physics of it are kind of interesting. I don't quite understand them all the way. But the gist of it is, when you put an inductor and a capacitor side by side and wire them in parallel, they resonate at a certain frequency depending on the particular values of inductance and capacitance they have. You can think of it kind of like a tuning fork. When you strike a tuning fork, it resonates at a certain particular frequency. That's the tone you hear. An LC circuit is the same thing, except with electricity. So the exact frequency you get is dependent on how much inductance and how much capacitance you have in the circuit. More capacitance is lower frequency, more inductance is higher frequency. If you remember from last week, we talked about how the theremin uses the antenna and your hand to form a capacitor. Not a very large one, but a capacitor nonetheless. So if you make that capacitor part of your LC circuit, as you move your hand closer or further away from the antenna, the C, the capacitance in the LC circuit, changes and the frequency changes. So then you have two variable oscillators that are controlled by your hand. So now we just have to figure out a way to get that variable frequency that you're putting in into music. Let's start with the pitch antenna and the pitch reference and variable oscillator. The pitch portion of the theremin uses a principle called heterodyning, in order to get the frequency that comes out of the speakers of the theremin. Heterodyning is a term that is very rarely used outside of radio, but what it means is if you add two frequencies together, mathematically what happens is you get several components, several frequencies that come out of it. One that is the addition of both of those together, and then one that is the subtraction of both of those together. So if I took a tone at 200 Hz and a tone at 300 Hz and played them side by side, I would hear one tone at 200, one tone at 300, one tune at the sum of those, which is at 500 Hz, and then one tone at the difference of those, which is 100 Hz. Guitarists, especially electrical guitarists, will understand this, because this is what causes intermodulation distortion, they call it. certain chords, certain types of musical combinations. You can't really play well on the electric guitar because the combination of the combination of those produce really weird off tones that just sound terrible. There's some interesting videos on YouTube about it if you're curious. So how do we use this heterodyning in the theremin? We have a reference pitch oscillator that just oscillates at the same frequency. It's the same continuous tone, and it's extremely high pitched, like 175 kilohertz. It's way above the range of human hearing. You have another oscillator, which is a variable oscillator, which is right around that same area. So when your hand is not touching the antenna at all, it's about the same, maybe 175 kilohertz, far above the range of human hearing. As you move your hand closer, those two frequencies get further apart. Now, when they get further apart, they start to heterodyne. So you get one product that is the sum of those two, which is still way too high for us to hear, and another that is the difference of those two. And since they started out very close, the difference between those two is still something we can hear. It might be, you know, a A or a C flat or some weird note in between, more likely, but it's something that we can hear. And that product of those heterodyning signals is the tone that comes out of the theremin. We take that tone and we pipe it into an amplifier and make it loud enough for us to hear, and then pipe it into a speaker or a set of headphones. This is actually very similar to the process for receiving radio signals. The bass radio frequency is very, very high, way too high for us to hear. But your radio has a little oscillator in it that vibrates very near that same frequency. So if you put out a frequency that's just a little bit off of that by an amount that the human ear can hear, when those two signals heterodyne, you can listen to that radio signal. So it's actually very similar to a radio receiver. So that's the pitch component. What about the volume? So the volume circuit is interesting as well, but in a totally different way. You still have a variable oscillator, but now that gets fed into another LC circuit. One of the interesting things about the LC circuit is that in addition to vibrating at a particular frequency when you give them power, they don't allow that frequency to pass through them. They kind of reflect it back the way it came. A LC circuit that resonates at a given frequency, like 175 kHz, for example, will actually block 175 kHz signal from going through it. It will grab all that energy and just store it inside, which is sometimes why they're called tank circuits. As the frequency moves away from the circuit that is resonant, it'll start to pass that signal through, but there's a little bit of a edge there. It would block it completely at exactly 175, and as you move a little further away, it'll start to block it a little bit less until you get far enough away that it has really very little effect. So on the volume circuit, you have your volume oscillator that is set to oscillate at a particular frequency when your hand is very, very close, and then you build a tank circuit that blocks that exact frequency. As you move your hand away from the volume control, that frequency changes, and more and more of that signal gets passed through that tank circuit because it's no longer resonant. You take that signal and you use that to drive the gain of an amplifier, like an audio amplifier, that determines how loud the pitch is at the end. This principle is used in some types of ham radio antennas to make the same long wire antenna work at different frequencies. You put a tank circuit halfway down the antenna, and at a particular frequency, it makes the antenna act like it stops right there. So you can have different lengths of antenna in one giant wire with a little trap in the middle. So then the last component is just a straight-up audio amplifier. What it's amplifying is whatever signal comes out of the two pitch oscillators after they've been heterodyned, right? So that's the tone that it's trying to amplify. And how much it amplifies is controlled by how strong the signal is from the volume circuit. At the end of that, you just plug it into a speaker, and there you have a theremin. There you have it, more than you ever wanted to know about an obscure musical instrument. So this last week, I tried to build all three of these oscillators, the reference pitch oscillator, the variable pitch oscillator, and the variable volume oscillator. And I got them all built, but I am 1 for 3 on getting them to actually work. The volume variable oscillator works fine, but both the pitch variable and reference oscillator aren't really oscillating very well. I put power to them, and they just give me 8 volts out, roughly, with a little bit of wiggle around there. So it's oscillating a little bit, but it's oscillating at like 8 volts. It should be oscillating a lot more, and it should be oscillating between like positive 2 and negative 2. It should be like a little waveform right around 0 volts. So I got to figure out what's going on there. I currently don't really know. I'm going to poke around with the oscilloscope and see what I can find. And I will update you guys next week, and we'll see how it goes. Egghead out.
Okay, he has definitely out-nerded me. I understood maybe 30% of that.
Yeah.
That was really technical.
Well, so here's a cool little thing, is that the egghead actually came by my place for 4th of July, and he was sitting down, and I was introducing him to some of my other friends, and I went, "Oh yeah, this is my buddy. Yeah, he's an engineer, and he's got a ham radio license." And it was on. And I have no idea what they were talking about, but they sure were talking, and they sure were smiling.
Okay, then.
Yeah. There was me and Egghead's significant other, and we're just standing there, and we're smiling and going.
It is good to occasionally be reminded what we sound like when we nerd out in front of other people. Like when I start talking about role-playing games or ponies or guns or whatever, and some people are just like, "You're saying words. I understand all the words individually, but together like that, no, this makes no sense."
Yeah.
And I'm going, "Come on, it's easy. Join us." And then I hear Egghead talking about this, and ow.
There was I saw a picture that Mike Williamson posted, and it was a whole bunch of guns, and let me tell you, a whole bunch of them definitely looked like they were in some sort of NFA configuration, and someone made a reference of the, "I hope the stamps are all in order" in that one, and somebody else chimed in and goes, "Please don't jump on me, but what do you mean by stamps?" They just weren't familiar with the NFA, but it's one of those like, okay, you guys are talking about something. You guys all seem to know what you're talking about. I have no idea what you're talking about. What's going on? And thankfully, gunnies are super sweet. And that person was like, "Oh no, there's this, the NFA. Yeah, some of those have got super short barrels. Some of those are full auto. Those things all need stamps." And I think they might have even referenced all the different tax stamp values. Some of them are 5, some of them are 200. All of them are evil.
Evil stamps.
Evil stamps. Let's pay tribute to the king.
So Egghead mentioned heterodyning, and you heard what that was, and I got some of it. But that immediately made me wonder if there was a term called homodyning.
I'm sure there is.
There is. I looked it up. I don't really understand what it is, but it is a thing. So maybe Egghead, just for laughs next week, will compare and contrast heterodyning to homodyning.
I mean, it's super common on the whole scientific head. Like, I laughed so hard the first time I ever heard someone use the term cisgender. Laughing so hard because I'd taken organic chemistry, and God, I just was just murdering myself, just poring over the books, trying to figure out, oh, all the cis versus trans enantiomers of various organic compounds. And it just simply is just simply talking about of the way you can draw a symmetry line through a molecule. And a certain molecule might be one way or rotated the other way, and they are considered cis or trans. And so the idea of the transgender, as in transitioning, and they just decided to go on I believe trans, and this is actually going off of like transverse. So
trans is Latin. It means across. Yes. On the other side.
Yes.
As opposed to cis, meaning on this side.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that would be, a cis would be if a molecule would be U-shaped, and then you rotate one of the bonds in the middle, and suddenly now it's S-shaped. That would be the S-shaped one would be the trans enantiomer, and the U-shaped one would be the cis enantiomer. But either way, I just love the fact that I remember that class in organic chemistry too. And somebody else had probably come out of the, "Why don't we just call it cis?" I'm like, that's kind of cool. So thanks to each and every one of our listeners, and a very special thanks to all our supporters on Patreon. To become a Patreon patron, go to patreon.com/assortedcalibrespodcast to sign up. Patrons get an early release of the podcast, plus bonus content like our hilarious blooper reels, the ACP film tracks, and the ACP mag dump. You can get more from me at my blog, which is weirdworld.com. That's weerdworld.com, and hear me weekly on Handgun Radio on the Firearms Radio Network.
Well, you can find me at my nerd blog, lurkingrhythmically.blogspot.com. I haven't written much for my prepping blog lately, but just in case, that's bluecollarprepping.blogspot.com. Of course, you can find me on the Facebooks, and I want to pimp a... I'm not really sure what to call it. It's not really a podcast. It's not really a vlog, but it's Gun Gals, and we get together every Sunday and sort of a live stream where a bunch of us gun-toting girls bring guests on, and it's sort of like the round table that we do, and you know, I should probably have the link for that, but I don't. And so I'm going to leave that as an exercise for the app student. You just look up Gun Gals on YouTube and you'll find us.
Or it'll magically show up in the show notes.
It might. Wow. It's almost like we have a helpful little brownie here.
Yes. Or you could literally just search Gun Gals. Like, let me Google that for you. I did it. It's easy. Thanks to Nate Spencer for our music.
He's cis, and I'm trans. Our isomers are assorted, and so is our podcast. Good night, everybody.
Good night.